on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Ronnie.
Law does its job. Dean Cox again. This time he's in. At the second time of asking, Dean Cox takes Leighton Orient a step closer to Wembley.
Carroll. Jonathan to Hue.
Capable of anything. To Hue. Equaliser for Leighton Orient.
We're not a city. We're not a town. We're the only one of us around, and you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we'll lay an Orient from E10. Lay an Orient from E10.
Good evening and welcome to the Orient Hour, coming to you live from Phoenix 98 FM in Brentwood. The Orient Express is chugging along nicely. Who needs HS2 when we're going on so fast? Okay, so we've got an illustrious panel of guests in the studio with us this evening. Firstly and most importantly, we have on the buttons Mr. Richard Priest.
Hello, yes, most importantly, thank you, yeah.
Absolutely. If there are any technical difficulties, we know who to blame. And to my left, we have Mr. Darren Burrows, who is smiling away unusually.
I've just been called illustrious. That's the nicest thing I've been called all week, Grant. But yeah, carry on, mate.
We're on air, so we have to be polite. And next to him, the all-singing, all-dancing, announcing Mr. Barry Galvin.
I don't dance, you know that. And by the way, I thought you had wind, Darren. I've never seen you smile before. I was going to put you over my shoulder. Good evening.
And to my right, we have our special guest, Mr. Matt Porter. Good evening, Matt. Thank you very much for giving up your time and coming to join us this evening.
Thanks for having me on. Hello, everyone. Welcome along.
So, fantastic result that we had on Saturday where we beat Bolton 1-0. Who could have dreamt that we'd be ninth in the league at this point of the season with a whole bunch of home games coming up in February? Who knows where we'll be by the end of the month, come the end of February, going into March. So, gentlemen, let's have a quick review of what we think about the performance on Saturday. Let's go to Matt first.
I think what impressed me, and I wasn't at the Reebok Stadium or whatever they call it now, when we started slowly, shall we say, the other week, but what impressed me was, a couple of minutes before the game, I saw one of our analysts, and I said to him, what's the plan today? And he said, the plan today is to be on the front foot and get right at them from the first whistle. And if you think back to the way we started that game, we did that, and we put Bolton on the back foot. We made it clear that we were the home team, we were in charge, much in the same way that they did to us up at their place. And I think that probably threw off whatever game plan they thought they were going to bring down to us. That threw them off course with that. And once we got that early foothold in the game, I thought we were the better side for the vast majority of it.
Barry.
Yeah, by the way, Matt, it's called the Tough Sheet Community Stadium
now.
I'll
let you say that,
which is,
seeing as we're pre-warned.
Very carefully said that. Yeah, that's incredible alliteration, isn't it? But yeah, I was so pleased. I know people think I'm a little bit over the top with the prize and stuff, but I mean, the way we played the last two games, Portsmouth and Bolton, it's been a revelation. It's been brilliant. It's not only the result, obviously, the clean sheets is great, but it's been the way we've been playing, the opportunities created, and the team spirit and the team, the club, and we were saying up on the gantry on Saturday, what would have been if we'd have had maybe Jordan Graham and Dan Agyei for the whole season? You know, I mean, not getting carried away here, but it's good to see us playing well. It's good to see the full Brisbane Road, you know, 8,600 there again on Saturday. And I thought we thoroughly deserved the victory, albeit we got very lucky with Dion Charles, incredibly reliable striker, missing that open goal with a header. But we deserved that bit of luck. We've seen it go against us so many times, and I was smiling for most of the match. I thought for 70 minutes, I think the first 20 was quite even. And you said, Matt, we got at them, and maybe they didn't expect that. It's quite even. And then from that point onwards, I thought we dominated the match and deservedly got the win.
Richard?
Yeah, I'd go 100% with all that. I mean, it's probably the best home performance, I think, of the season. I mean,
the one thing I've always felt under Richie is that I've never really feel like, I mean, I didn't go to Portsmouth, so this could be the answer, but I've never really seen like a full on 90 minutes. You know, there's an hour's great, 45 minutes is great, and the other team come back into it. But I actually felt, you know, the thing is, once we were 1-0 up, Bolton were always going to, they had no other choice. So, but I thought 70 minutes, it was pretty much perfect. You know, it was, I say, I wasn't at Portsmouth, but, you know, from what I gather, it was sevens and eights minimum all round for all the players on the pitch. And for me, you know, even when the subs came on, you know, they was running around for after everything, they were getting involved. And I mean, it was as good an atmosphere as I think. I'm sure I read somewhere, someone said, like, even up to last year, actually, I think it might have been one of the Outlook boys, and they said that even up to last year's games, the atmosphere for this game and the way it was probably up there with any match last season as well, I'd say.
Darren.
Yeah, I was going to add to that. The atmosphere, I think, really helped us on Saturday. Bolton were vocal, as you'd expect the away end. Away sport was always vocal. But what we're doing now at Brisbane Road is we're getting back at them. We're vocal. And those boys in the south stand, in that corner, are creating such a good atmosphere. And the club always say it helps, so it must. There's too many... Matt, it helps?
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think what's great about it is that it's been created naturally and organically. You know, we have talked in the past, and at various times people have said, I'll create a singing section and whatever. But when clubs that have done that artificially, it doesn't work. People feel forced. Other people feel displaced. You know, it needs to be generated by the fan base. And yeah, of course, the team need to give you something to latch hold of. But in the same vein, isn't it great to have people turning up to the ground with the intention of creating an atmosphere for the, you know, for everybody's benefit? Because you hear the North Stand getting involved, and you know, it's I think it's fantastic. You know, the putting on a show song, you know, which is just taken over now. It's brilliant, you know, and a lot of players have got their own songs as well. And that's proper terrace culture. That's all come from people who are coming through the turnstile. So, you know, on behalf of the club, we're really grateful for it and thankful. And it's I think it's been fantastic.
And it's great. It's a new generation as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
of Orient fans, which has really helped. And just saying something you said, Richard, about the 90-minute performance. I think the only game I've seen this year is at Cambridge. We beat Cambridge 2-0. Maybe lesser opposition, but we were absolutely superb.
Yeah, I did say that one, actually. Yeah, you're right, actually, yeah.
We were definitely 90 minutes going to Portsmouth. Definitely.
And
the hard work that's going in from the team, 1 to 15, whoever's coming on, everyone's working really hard. That's why we're getting results against local bigger clubs. And if you look at the endeavour that's going on, those guys must be coming off, excuse my language, knackered. And that's what you want. The fans, you want, bare minimum, you want effort.
Well, Richie calls that his non-negotiable, doesn't he? That level of hard work, effort and intensity. That's his non-negotiable. So whatever type of player you are and whatever your role is in the squad, if you're not offering that, he doesn't want you around. You know. So I think that's a great footing, a great starting point.
I think that for me, it's about confidence. I think that we, even though Charlton are struggling currently, and they've just lost their manager, as we saw after their defeat last night, I think that beating them, because they were seen as a Big Eight club, and there's been a bit of an emphasis on that through the season about trying to beat a Big Eight club, and we did that. And I think they took that confidence in going into the Cambridge game, and then that victory there, and then at Portsmouth. We've had a consistent team, pretty much the last few weeks. Sadly, you know, Tom James lost his father and he had to come out, but what a great job Jaden Sweeney did when he came in, just to maintain that, the confidence through the squad. Like, everyone looked completely comfortable with what their roles are. Our football is so fluid at the moment. I really haven't seen an Orient team playing the quality of football that we're playing. Richie always goes on about the quality of our performances rather than results, and the results will take care of themselves, and that really was one of those games on Saturday. I thought the first half display was excellent. The way we moved the ball around, Bolton just like were chasing shadows. And one of the highlights for me as well was the match-up between Dan Agyei and Santos at the back. What a battle that was.
Yeah, he's a big guy, wasn't he? He's like a heavyweight boxer, wasn't he? But Dan kept plugging away and got his reward in the end.
He did.
You talk about confidence, Grant. The opposite is true. You mentioned Charlton. You can see how important it is, because you look at them now. You know, they look like they're going to lose every time they go out. So confidence is key, I think you're right.
And
we're on the opposite run to them, aren't we?
I don't know whether it's coincidence or whether they've made a policy decision, the coaching staff, but they're playing the 4-2-3-1 more or less consistently now, and it does seem to suit our squad, although of course horses for courses. So, Rich.
I was going to say, because the last home game I went to before Saturday was actually a month ago. So I missed Boxing Day and I missed the game on the 29th. But I think, was it Derby, the one before that? So it was where the fan actually went up to Richie and, you know, started berating him. And, you know, so my next home game after that was...
I bet you feel silly now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd love to know that. Well, so I love, if he's there, well, I'd love to speak
to him. I'm sure it was a really insightful piece of wisdom the game.
I mean, this really, is... Really, but yeah. It just shows you, though, I've gone from one home game to that, and the difference between the atmospheres in the two and the performances in the two, I mean, it just shows you how quickly things can change, really.
That move to the four has been important, and I think it's something that Richie's always wanted to do. It's his preference to have four defenders with two centre-halves, but... It was a question of finding a partnership that were comfortable with each other and could play together week in, week out. The point you made, Grant, about the settled team, I think is important. Having Ethan Galbraith, Max Sanders in the team on a regular basis, Dan Adji coming in. Three of our major summer permanent signings. We've got a lot of loan players, but they were three the major permanent summer signings, with Jordan Graham being lost, obviously. So to be winning games with them in the team and a settled team, I think, is really important.
It shows that Richie's now moulding the squad as he wanted. These are his signings now that are coming through. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, we've got two new signings. Well, Mr. Cooper has come back, so that's not effectively a new signing, as well as the chap O'Neill, and see how he gets on for the rest of this season and going forward, because these are the future of the club now.
His initials are O-O. He can't go wrong.
It's meant to be.
Who's he going to play for?
Okay, so following the game, because Mr. Wellens was shown a red card, it meant that he was unable to give a media interview. We will touch on what happened there later on, possibly. But for now, let's hear from Matt Harold with his views on the game.
Well, Matt, thanks for joining us. I should explain first that because of an EFL ruling and Richie Wellens receiving a red card, he's not allowed to face the media, but he and everybody would imagine thrilled with that performance and result.
Yeah, really thrilled. I think the last time I had to do an interview, I was explaining to everyone to stay calm, stay patient when we lost 3-0 to Derby with 10 men. So sometimes I know what I'm talking about. So it's been a big turnaround and change since then. And I think the players deserve a hell of a lot of credit. You know, we've looked like a really good team, I think, for the last six games. So need to keep it going. Need to stay aggressive and on the front foot like we have been, I think, in them six games, and just keep it going.
A cagey first half, but the O's looked so positive after the break.
Yeah, but even in the first half, I thought we were really positive. I think we limited them to a really good chance, albeit being said. I think it was a really dominant display. I think we were the better team. I do think they probably had two of the best chances of the game. But I thought it was excellent. I thought our aggression, we were on the front foot. And I thought we forced him into a lot of mistakes. So I thought it was a really good performance, strong performance.
Dan Ajayi with the well-taken goal. Just how much of an impact has he had?
Well, I think you're now seeing, you know, we had to be patient. He's obviously missed a hell of a lot of the season, and we're building his minutes up, building him up in training. And now I just think he's looking like a hell of a threat, you know. I don't think many defenders would want to come up against him because he's just got that unpredictability. He's got that strength, the power. And I think in the last few games, his finishing's been different class. So, massive, massive boost for everyone. And he just now, we've got to keep him fit and keep him going. And he can go from strength to strength, I think.
Three straight wins, five straight clean sheets now. I think it's one more for the club record. Looking so tight at the back.
Yeah, and again, credit with... we changed back from a three at the back or a five at the back. And I think we've been excellent in a four. And I think It does come from the front, I have to say. I don't think it's just because of the defence and the goalkeeper that we're getting clean sheets. It's because we're relentless in our work and our pressing at the top end and in midfield. So they're making it easier for the boys at the back. But credit to them. Credit to the team. I think they're stopping the opposition as high up as they can, and it means that we're not conceding too many chances. So need to keep it doing it.
And Jaden Sweeney did well.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a terrible situation with Jaden coming in with TJ, what's happening with his family. So Sweeney's got the late call, and no credit to him. I think he'd come in and he he done really, really well. I think he made some good decisions early. I thought he looked a threat going forward. And it's down to him now to keep building on it and keep pushing everyone to when he gets another chance. But he keeps it.
We started talking about the fact that Richie Wellens saw red again. Any complaints about the decisions? I mean, Williams was taking throws wherever he wanted, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I think that's probably our frustration, is that it did feel like they were picking the ball up and gaining probably 5 yards. And look, it's just a split-second reaction. I've just seen it again. It does look pretty light. I mean, he hasn't elbowed him or really grabbed him, but he's maybe just stopped his momentum. So maybe a touch harsh, but you just don't know with the rules now what you can and can't do. So yeah, strange one. I've never really come across that situation before, to be honest. But we'll have to see, yeah.
But these really are exciting times for the club. 9th in the table, 11 points off the playoffs. Is that something that you're talking about now?
Not really. I think the big emphasis all along has been get back to being what we are, front foot, aggressive, physical, a threat. And I think it's a boring cliche, isn't it? But you just got to go into every game. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of games coming up in February and March, so... You know, let's not get too ahead of ourselves. I think we just need to go into every game and think we can win it and we can cause the opposition a problem. That's how I feel personally. I think that's how we all feel as a group. I think we're in a good place, but the squad's going to be needed. You know, there's no doubt about that. We've got a lot of games, so everyone's got to keep pushing. The attitude, our standards needs to stay high, and then just attack each game.
The window's open. Are you looking for players to join the squad?
It's nothing to do with me, is it? Obviously, if there's things to be done to improve the squad, we'd like to do it. You know, I think one's maybe close, but yeah, it's down to those above me.
Okay, and then any injuries picked up today?
Any injuries? There's a couple of niggles, but nothing more. Nothing too bad, I don't think. I think there's just precautionary stuff as you get. It's been a funny time. We haven't trained that much this week in terms of... it's been a bit here and there because of the frozen pitches. So it's been a funny week like that. So we just got to assess everyone. Again, we've got another 3 weeks to work on things. So it looks like there's not too many problems in that department.
But Reading have got problems, and it's Reading next weekend.
Yeah, I mean, another big club. Obviously going through a really tough time. But, you know, we can't have sympathy. You can have sympathy for what they're going through, but we need to keep being ruthless and doing our jobs. That's what we're paid to do. So we need to go into that and keep doing it. Another big game, a great club, big club. Let's go and enjoy it and let's be on the front foot.
Good luck. Thank you very much. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank
you. Cheers, Dave. Thank you very much, Matt Harrell, there for your thoughts on the game. As I say, it was a big difference from the Derby home defeat when he gave his last interview. I'm sure it was a great relief for him for us to coming out with a victory this time. So the reason why he gave the interview, as I said, was because our manager was shown a red card in the second half for what can only be called, in my opinion, a tactical foul. He confirmed in an interview on the Outlook podcast on Sunday that he was aware that the ball may get thrown over Omar Beckles, and therefore he decided to prevent the player from taking the throw in quickly. It is a mandatory red card under the laws of the game, so they can't plead ignorance to that. That's been a law for a couple of years now. So, Matt, does the club have a slush fund for all these fines that it picks up?
No, it's on Richie. It's on Richie. I mean, look, Richie's great. We love him to death. We have spoken to him a couple of times about about how he is in terms of staying out of trouble, because he's semi-regular in the notebooks, as is Paul, as is Matt, you know, and they've got a lot of passion and a lot of commitment, and that's very commendable, but it's important for the overall project, if you like, that they're there to lead it. So, look, Richie knows what he's doing. Anything he does like that, he does it for a reason, but he's also aware that he's more useful in the technical area than out of it.
I think it's one of the hardest things in sport is what they call controlled aggression, isn't it? You know, boxing, football. You've got to be aggressive, you've got to be on it, but you can't let it boil over, haven't you? And there's a fine line, and sometimes people get it wrong, obviously. Not defending, obviously, you can't do that. And we quite rightly, it was a red card, wasn't it?
He took red card for the team, basically. I don't know whether he was fully aware whether it was a red for what he was going to do, but obviously he didn't have a chance to make that. He had that split decision to make that decision, but he definitely took one for the team there. He made a decision. And the other thing is, as well, as you may have seen this afternoon, listeners, that there's going to be a charge from the EFL as a result of him being, you know, got bang into trouble again, because he got sent off at Wickham, didn't he, as well, I think, and he's had other yellow cards numerously through the season.
Because I said, I was unaware that he wasn't, because he came and stood, so I sit directly behind the dugout, so he sat there originally, then he got moved, and then he stood at the top of the stairs of the gallery, which I thought was like, but apparently, I guess that's what he's in trouble for, because he's not allowed to see the game, right? I didn't know that, I have to be honest.
The laws say that when you receive a red card, you are not allowed to be within the vicinity of the pitch or its surrounds and be within view of the playing area. And
he must have known that, surely.
I don't know, maybe decided that he was going to be in for the whole lot, really. And the fact is, well, I've already been sent off, so I might as well get into trouble for that as well. I don't know.
But usually, managers who are sent off usually come up to the balcony where we are. But
Probably would have been okay there.
Stay involved. Yeah, I mean, they're allowed up there. That's kind of pre-agreed, I think, with the fourth official, but... I think Richie wanted to still stay involved.
He was still...
And watch the game, Matt. Are they allowed to go up and watch the game?
They watch the game, yeah. Whether they're allowed to or not. But they confused, certainly like. Do. Well, certainly when Richie's had a touchline ban, he's come and sat up. He watched one of the... Pizza Cup, I can't call it that anymore, can I? What's it called now? Bristol Street Motors Trophy games.
Best one. Well remembered. Yeah. Well,
and Exeter away, watched that with Martin Ling in the director's box.
So if he gets a three-game ban, for example... He is still allowed to watch the game. Yeah,
there's a difference between a touchline ban and a stadium ban, isn't there? And correct me if I'm wrong, a touchline ban, he can still be... It's just when and where he's allowed in the dressing room. He can still be in the stadium on a match day, is that right?
I believe so, yes.
There's certain windows where he can't go in the dressing room. So, whether it's... I'm making this up, but whether it's 15 minutes before, then half-time, then 15 minutes after or whatever. But obviously a stadium ban, you're on your sofa.
And it could be looking at a stadium ban.
I don't know. I think that's more reserved for really aggressive conduct.
I think it would probably just be a touchline ban, but we'll have to wait and see. But I think it's inevitable that it's going to happen.
If it's a stadium ban, he can... come round mine, I'll get the wife to cook him a lovely dinner, and he can watch it on the chaise lawns on the stream.
I'm sure you'll be able to get past the language barrier between the two of you.
My younger brother.
But this might be more than a one-game ban as well now, though, I think, right?
It might be three. But,
he's had this for a few times.
If it follows players, then you get, for every additional dismissal, you get an extra game.
Yeah.
If it follows players. But I think is it a panel who decides, or is it in the rule book?
Well, with the EFL, who knows what's going to happen? I have to be careful what I say on air, but I don't hold them in the highest regard. I don't think many people do. Look what's happening at Reading at the moment. Although apparently there's further sanction against their owner following the pitch invasion. I saw an article yesterday that if they have another pitch invasion, they are looking at another points deduction, which has now been suspended, another 3 points. So there's another pitch incursion, as they call it. The 3 points will be deducted immediately. So I think we have nearly 2,000 supporters going there on Saturday. I don't imagine that we'll have another pitch invasion.
They've said they're not going to, haven't they? Their supporters groups have come out.
Because they're damaging the team. They're actually in really good form, but we'll come on to Reading later.
It's just not in their interest now, is it? Not whatsoever.
They've made their point.
They've made it, and they've got the publicity, to be fair. And also,
quite right.
They get a good result on Saturday, they'll climb out. They could be climbing out of it. They won't obviously get a good result on Saturday. But.
So, Matt, we've established that it's down to Richie to pay his fines. Could you just give us an outline, please, about your current role at Leyton Orient at the moment and what that entails? Because I know you're also involved with the darts as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, the darts is my job. So I work for Barry Hearn. I've worked for him for 22 years. And for 13 of those years, I was employed full-time at Orient. And then for the last 6.5 years, I've been a non-exec director there since... working with Nigel and Kent and everybody else when we got the club back in 2017. So I don't have an operational role. I assist where needed. I advise where needed. I know Mark Devlin very well. I've known Mark for many years since he was chief exec at Brentford back when I was running Orient. And obviously Lindsay, Lucy, Ada, all the people back room I've known for all my adult life. So I'm just called upon as and when needed. If it's felt I've got any areas where I can add some value. So for as long as I'm required, I'll be delighted to do it.
Gosh, you, Matt, was you integral in getting Mark Devlin in the building?
Yeah, I spoke to Mark about the role.
Well done, because he's a great CEO, really.
Yeah, no, Mark's a good guy. He's got plenty of experience, plenty of nous, and he's a very safe pair of hands for us.
So how did your love affair with the Orient start? Go, take us right the way back to the beginning,
so
please.
I first started watching Orient live in the 92-93 season. I was 12, and I was walking home from school with a friend of mine, and I said, what are you doing at the weekend? He said, I'm going over Leighton Orient. And I said, oh, can I come with you? So my dad's from Blackpool, so it wasn't like a father-son thing. So he'd moved down to London in the 60s, but it was, Orient wasn't his team, obviously. Blackpool are. And he actually he wouldn't go to the 2001 playoff final because he knew... He knew if they won, me and my brother would be really upset. So, like, we're actually sponsoring the game, the Orient Blackpool game. My family's sponsoring it this year, and my kids and my brother's kids will be mascots, which was supposed to be on January the 6th. Is now going to be on February the 27th. So we geared them up for a cold game either way. But yeah, so it wasn't a family thing originally, but obviously the family's changed now, and it's all Orient. But yeah, so 92-93 was when I started going regularly, and then started working for the club in 2001 after I left university, and Barry needed a full-time press officer for the club. At the time, the club was getting websites and things like the audio commentary and the video highlights started to come in. So it feels like a long time ago, Barry, and you're nodding.
Yeah.
Must be a long time.
Yeah, but we're all older than you, so we're remembering it as well.
Well, yeah.
That's great.
So you took on. So you were supporting the club, and then how did it come around that you became employed by Barry?
So I always wanted to be a journalist. I started reporting on the club for the local papers back in the days. You remember the Green Top Guardian, the Redbridge Guardian, the Waltham Forest Guardian, and then the Hackney Gazette as well, Ilford Recorder. Glory days of local newspapers. I don't think any of them are still around now in paper format, but. Yeah, I started reporting on Orient for them in 1996. And then started doing Capital Gold Sport, and that really was great. That was when Jonathan Pearce was the lead commentator. Dave Clark was there, and it was around the grounds every week. And I would go up to Leicester Square about 6 o'clock in the morning, pick up this thing called an ISDN kit, which is the thing you plug in to report on from the ground. I'd get the train from to wherever, Hartlepool, Darlington, Plymouth, wherever we were going. You'd have to get there so early, you'd be there about 12:15, and nobody could understand why you were there at that time. But I loved that, live radio. That was so exciting, doing a match commentary or live updates. And then started full-time at the club, as I say, in 2001, and got the opportunity to be chief exec in 2006, which was something I never anticipated happening, and gave me a huge change in career direction.
So this continued until Barry sold the club, and then there was a hiatus, should we call it?
Yeah, so in 2014, Barry sold the club, and it was the right time for him to exit in terms of where we were as a club. Then we'd built ourselves up to a position where obviously everybody knows what happened in that season. But for a club of our size, we were better than anybody else. And I say that genuinely, we were. Both on the pitch and off the pitch, and it was the right time for the opportunity for somebody else to try and fund taking us back to a level we haven't been at since 1982, you know, the second tier of English football. Unfortunately, the wrong decision was made, you know, there's no two ways about it, and Barry would say the same thing if he was sat in this chair. The bloke was a complete idiot, and he ruined the club, and that's, you know, that happened. And hindsight's a wonderful thing, and people on Twitter have got plenty of hindsight, and you know, it is what it is. But all I will say is, had that not happened, this wouldn't be happening now. You know, I stayed in contact with Nigel throughout those years. I stayed in contact with people at the club, and it quickly became apparent that it was a complete car crash, and something would need to happen to get us back to where we wanted to be. So Nigel's, the quote he always gave me was, I don't want to own Leighton Orient, but I'll save it if I need to. And I remember I sent him an email, said, the time's come, you need to save it. And he did, and he found Kent by chance. It was brilliant. And then Marshall, Dave, Rich, you know, that was where it all started. And obviously the rest from then you all know.
Like a rebirth, isn't it, really?
Yeah. It was, and I think probably when you talk about everything like the sellout crowds now and the atmosphere in the stadium and, you know, the two title wins in 6 years, all of that, it probably wouldn't have come about if we'd have carried on where we were in 2014, because we were what we were. You know, this is a different direction now and a fresh impetus.
I was going to say as well, you're saying obviously we wouldn't be where we were now without that, but do you think the fan base now, so certainly for me, like I'm so appreciative now because of what we went through previously. Yeah. Like how, I mean, I was on the Somme trip and we were talking at that season about... you know, with a Phoenix club and stuff. And I was sitting, I remember looking at my dad going, I was terrified. That's because I was like, what do we do here? Yeah. I can't go and watch us at Hornchurch or, you know, what I would have done. But I just thought, how's this going to work? You know, things like that. I mean, I appreciate it so much more now.
I think you're right. If something that's very dear to you could potentially be taken away, then it starts to realise what it actually is, and you don't take it for granted. And, you know, all of us and everybody listening to this, you know, we all have our own love for Leighton Orient, and if you try and imagine your life without it, it'd be very different, wouldn't it? And it'd be quite sad. But what is, I think, worse is that perhaps then, nearly 10 years ago, when that all first started, there weren't actually that many clubs who'd maybe gone through that process. You look at it now. You know, there aren't too many football fans in the country who can hand on heart say that, you know, especially in the bottom two divisions, if you like, and clubs have dropped into non-league and disappeared. It's happening a lot, you know, and football fans maybe generally now are more appreciative of their clubs because more and more of them have got close to having them taken away from them.
Do you think some of our extra fans that we required have come from disillusioned Premier League clubs?
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you hear that anecdotally. I don't think there's hundreds and hundreds.
Or do you think it's a new generation?
I think there's some. I think people like the ability to go to games and feel like they're part of something. You know, I mean, I go to Premier League games and it's quite sterile. You know, it's not the same as when you go into something that really means something to you and you feel part of. And I think what you hear is a lot of people who have cottoned on to Orient perhaps a bit later in life and have really developed a love for it, even like going away games and, you know, just going more regularly. Whereas, you know, I don't think you get that with people who start going to Premier League football later in life. It's maybe a bit more corporate or, you know, a bit more touristy.
Well, we're 10 years on now from the Russell Slade era, and there's a similar vibe. It's different, but it's the same. And let's just hope that we don't have another repeat of what happened. I'm sure we won't. With things going, the demise that we had, that I'm sure that won't happen.
That does bring on nicely to a question for you, though, Matt. The club have just announced a loss of 3.9 million. That probably makes the hairs on the back of most of our necks go up. It certainly does mine. What do we do about it? How do we get to more manageable losses?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because we've got a middle ranking budget for League One. Well, we could cut that loss in half straight away and probably be sitting on about the same number of points as Fleetwood now. You know, we haven't got a lot more seats to sell inside the stadium. You know, I know everybody knows we now announce attendances on tickets issued and sold rather than the number of people in the stadium, but that shows you that there aren't that many more to sell. You know, that 8,600 figure that we're getting most weeks out. Don't forget, the number of seats in the stadium is just under 9,300, but there's the reduced capacity in the East Stand because of its age and condition. So every game is pretty much sold out. So we haven't really got a lot more to sell. You know, there's the huge pressure on the commercial team to bring in non-match day revenue and to bring in more incremental spend on a match day. But we're also conscious of the fact that half our fans are season ticket holders, like loyal people who come week in, week out. And people, they have behavioural habits. You know what you're going to do before the game. Are you going to go to the same pub? Are you going to get there at the same time? Are you going to go to the club shop a certain number of times per season? And that isn't going to change hugely. You know, people who currently spend, let's say, a fiver with the club on a Saturday afternoon aren't going to all of a sudden start spending £25 because it just doesn't work like that. So the chances for us to increase revenue really come from non-match day activity, you know, in a substantial way. But also we have to look and make sure we're efficient, you know, make sure we haven't got too many, you know, too much fat, if you like, in terms of what's being spent around the edges, whilst also balancing that with the desire to progress. You know, we're very proud of our academy. It always produces talented young players. Well, we could cut the academy and save a few hundred thousand pounds, but then where's the Dan Happies and the Ruel Soterios and the Jaden Sweeneys of the future? That's not what we want to do. So it's difficult, and football increasingly is reliant on benefactors, and the vast majority of our funding comes from the people I've mentioned before, plus Nick Semica and Coley Parry, the new additions to the board, and football clubs need to be grateful for people who will put their hands in their pocket.
Trying to make it more sustainable, though, is surely the answer long term.
It is, and I think a lot of the work that's going on at the moment, and it's very slow and it's very painful, but this redistribution of finance through football from the Premier League and the broadcast deals and things like that. At some point, something will happen. But they've been talking about that since before COVID. So it's very difficult when Mark will sit there and do the budget for next year, and it's very difficult for him to write, oh, don't worry, we'll get an extra £2 million from the Premier League next year, because you don't know. You know, there is increased funding, and there will be more increased funding, but sustainability through becoming break even relies on some very drastic measures that would not necessarily be well received. You know, when I was running it, and football was different back then in terms of the amount of money in the game, Barry would tell me an amount of money that we could afford to lose per year, and it was generally between £500,000 and £1 million. And on a turnover of £3 to £4 million, we could do that, and we could progress. Most years, we could just about progress. Some years, we struggled a little bit. But then you look at it now, the club's turning over double that now, with the same number of seats in the stadium. So it's not easy.
Maybe the answer is then maybe to look at for either develop the stadium, which we know has its restrictions, or for the better for the club in the long, long term, is to look at a new stadium, even though it might hurt a little bit in the interim.
Yeah.
And where are we with that? Is there any progress in that regard?
We've done some research, and Mark will have more detail on this than me, although I've seen the paperwork, and it's prohibitively difficult to redevelop Brisbane Road, regardless of anything to do with the apartment blocks or anything like that. There's certain constraints of the stadium at the moment which are immovable. The fact it's surrounded by roads and a park and houses, it doesn't lend itself to being a 15,000-18,000 seater stadium. There just isn't the footprint there for that. You know, even if you took the flats out of the equation, it's not going to make a huge difference. You could rebuild the East Stand, but then you're going to be spending easy £15 million. For what benefit? For an extra 1,000 seats, 2,000 seats? You know, it would look lovely, but it wouldn't deliver that sort of the return that it would need.
It's just
deliver.
Not financially viable, is it?
No, it's not. No, no, it's not. It's really not. You know, you could do bits and pieces, maybe. You know, little bits here and there.
Actually, I thought that the West Stand, because of the structure and the height that it is already being established, I would say, even though that's probably the newest stand, that's the place where we will go to actually be able to expand the capacity, because we could add another tier in without going any higher.
It's not just seats, it's infrastructure as well. You know, exits, toilets, concourses, hospitality facilities. You know, all of the things that go with it. And the space behind the West Stand is all already utilised, and it isn't big enough anyway. You know, anyone who's been in the restaurant or the bar, you know the limitations of them. You know the capacities are about 200 in the restaurant or whatever. So when you're looking at saying, how can we generate another 3,000-5,000 seats to put fans in, you know, it's very, very difficult.
I think there was an interview with Nigel and Mark Devlin where they said that the West Stand itself probably wasn't designed as well as it could have been. It's really kind of limited. What we can't really do anything with it anymore.
It was designed on a budget. Everything at the time was designed on a budget. If you think back to the West Stand, for those that have got long enough memories, you know, the old West Stand was on the verge of being condemned. It was either rebuild it now. It genuinely was rebuild it now, or it won't get a safety certificate. You know, It was done in a way, the stadium redevelopment at the time was done in a way that meant the club didn't have to borrow any money. And obviously it delivered a certain amount of things well, and a certain amount of other things are quite limited as a result of it.
Because it's not just the club either in that, because isn't there like an NHS?
There is,
there's
yeah.
other parts
there's
and stuff.
There's one and a half floors, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The thing for me, we've got to accept that the stadium is a long term. There's no quick fix. There's no easy solution to this. So to get those losses down, I'm going to come back to those losses if I can, Matt. Are we looking to go down more the Peterborough route? Because we've made some good young signings recently, and I don't think that's by anything other than default. We've gone down that position. Am I onto something there? Or?
No, yeah, I think it's not a coincidence that you look at the age profile and the background of a lot of players that we've signed. They're players who potentially could have resale value, but that's not a bad thing. If somebody comes in, improves us, improves themselves, and we achieve a fee for them, and then they're replaced by somebody of a similar profile, I don't think anybody could argue with that. And I don't think you get many fans now who argue about the days of loyalty, and everybody understands players have got to go and do the best for themselves.
Brentford have got a similar kind of model as well. I've always wondered why teams don't follow that Peterborough route more, to be honest, because, you know, when they got Aaron, you know, you was it speculate to accumulate? You know, it just seems to make good sense. I think when it comes to football, with these, I remember, you know, we had Aaron McLean and all these strikers, they'd get in and would move on and stuff.
You have to be prepared to make mistakes because not everyone you bring in is going to return a six-figure profit or whatever. And it's difficult when, you know, when we look at players we're going to sign, and we're in a slightly more fortunate position now. We're in the top 10 of the division. We're not looking over our shoulders as much. So someone like Ollie O'Neill, we can sign him and say, right, you haven't got to come in on Saturday and be the best player and change our fortunes. We can sign you as part of a development, as part of a development plan, you know. Yeah. And there's certain circumstances where, you know, when we were in League Two, we signed players to get us out of League Two. When we're in the National League, we signed players to get us out of the National League. We're not signing players now and saying to them, you've got to get us in the Championship tomorrow or we're in all sorts of trouble. We're not saying that. What we're saying is we've got 2-3 year plan to get back to those that top eight, top six of League One and push on towards the playoffs. And if we can do that with a squad of players who have got a value to us, then all the better for the club.
What about the new EFL deal, TV deal, Matt? Is that going to bring in extra revenue?
It will do, yeah. I mean, it's not a huge amount more revenue, but these things always bring in incremental revenue, so there'll always be an extra, you know, low six figures or whatever per year. But I think it's very dangerous to sit there and rely on that sort of thing. You know, as you say, Darren, it's like nearly a £4 million loss. Well, the new EFL can go and do all the deals they like. We're not going to get £4 million extra from them for next year. So we have to make sure that the amount of money we lose is an amount of money that the people who are funding the club are comfortable with.
Matt, you touched on the fact that we just signed Ollie O'Neill and we signed Brandon Cooper on a permanent. Could you give us a bit more of an update, if anything, about any other transfers, incomings, outgoings in January, please?
Yeah, well, we always try and freshen up the squad because that's what you do to move forward, you know, and it doesn't need me to explicitly name names. You can see players who aren't getting pitch time. You can see players who've maybe been with us a while and would benefit from a change of environment. Players who are perhaps coming to the end of their contract. So there's always the ambition to drive it forward. You know, as I said before, when we were in League Two, we signed players who could get us into League One. Well, some of those players have maybe got us into League One and have you know, come to the end of the time when Richie's going to be picking them on a weekly basis. So it's always about freshening things up. The budget has been pretty much maxed out because of the work we did in the summer. We brought in a lot of players in the summer, and a lot of them were players on decent money. They were senior players, players with good pedigrees. And so in order to keep freshening things up, we've got to make sure that the exit door is moving as well as the revolving door, or I'm getting lost in metaphors. But
I think that was the surprise, because we knew the budget is maxed out, because these are two permanent signings as well. Yeah. So I was kind of thinking that we were going to get loans in and that would be it.
I mean, Brandon was obviously, we were incurring a cost for Brandon anyway. And Ollie being a younger player, you know, isn't necessarily, you know, breaking the bank, so to speak, although it's not belittling him in any way, shape or form. It's about the signings being the right people at the right price for the club. You know, that we're not going to go and throw a load of money. We're not going to go and panic now and throw a load of money at a 29-year-old. You know, you won't see George Ray and Frank Noble and people of that character coming through, of that profile, I mean. I didn't mean character, by the way. That was the wrong word to use. People of that profile coming through the door, because we don't need to make short-term decisions now. You know, those signings were made for a reason. They didn't work out. But my point is that now we are looking to sign players who can be an asset for the club over the next 2 to 3 years, rather than someone who can come in and perhaps be a sticking plaster or try to be a sticking plaster.
That's the difference, I think, between the way our club's philosophy and that of Stevenage, who realise that they will never ever probably be a championship club, and they've just signed players that can do a job for them in League One, rather than players that Richie might be able to develop, of just potentially to be looking to top half of the table to go into the Championship if it's viable.
Grant, they've just announced a £13,000 profit.
Yeah, I mean,
they're doing something right.
I don't know the ins and outs of Stevenage's accounts and why, but I mean, I would imagine their stadium has a lot lower running costs than ours. And also, they have a very successful college football scheme, which potentially is a big revenue generator for them. But you're right, I'll be off. Do you know what the turnover was for that?
I didn't catch that. No, okay. But it's their third. It's their third profit in 5 years.
Yeah, no, fair play. You can't knock that.
The cup runs. Yeah. they are renowned for.
Yeah,
so that's definitely
cup runs. Maybe their manager's cooking the books.
And we'll move on swiftly on that one. I'm glad you're from a loyal, a legal background, Grant. You can defend yourself.
I just said maybe.
The cup runs are important, and to be honest, we've been rubbish in the cups, haven't we, the last few years? You know, we would benefit. Look, I mean, I've said it before.
Do they genuinely make that much difference?
The 2011, we made £2 million from that.
Oh, right. Yes, they, you
know, yeah. It's a huge amount, and you're only going to do that once a decade. You know, but just to even get to the third round, even the second round's a couple of $100,000 with gate receipts and prize money and everything like that. You know, it's a shame that we haven't been. I mean, you actually get good prize money in the Football League Trophy, the Bristol Street Motors Cup.
Yeah, we're all pretty disappointed with the Chesterfield performance.
We just haven't done well in cup competition since we've been back in the league, which has been a shame, you know, because that is always the big surprise boost when it comes to cup revenues.
But not the Bristol Street Motors Trophy.
No, but it can, as I said, it can be. There's prize money, because they know, the league know, they have to incentivise clubs in that competition, otherwise they're not going to take it seriously. So there's prize money for winning it, it's prize money for getting through the group. Obviously, you get to Wembley, it's a few $100,000. If we got to Wembley, we know we'd take 30,000 fans. So, yeah. And also, you know, it's just for whatever reason, we just haven't done it in the cups.
Do you envisage that we'll have any more bodies in the building? Because we do have 7 games in February with 4 at home.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about what's happening in February. As I say, the squad evolution that we're trying to go on is more of a long-term planning. But nevertheless, we don't want to leave ourselves short. I would say you'd probably see, you know, a minimum of 2 out and minimum of 1 in before the end of the
season. There's a loan space now as well, isn't there, with Cooper signing permanently.
Cooper signing permanently does free up a loan, yeah. Yeah.
What's happening with Eldris?
Idris,
sorry, apologies. Elvis has left the building.
Yeah, I mean, Idris's status has been bandied about all over Ipswich local media and social media in the last few days, and it's no secret Ipswich are looking to get a return on him. He wasn't in their squad in League One, he's not in their squad in the Championship, so they're probably sitting there thinking, well, this lad's actually doing really well, but he's not for us at the moment, so how can we get a return on that? But Idris loves playing for us. He loves being in London. He's not going to make a rash decision. I think if somebody comes in and offers him a deal that is substantially beneficial for his future, then you may see him go on to pastures new. But as things stand at the moment, I would be quite hopeful that he would still be with us by the end of the month.
Just want to say, Darren, thanks very much, because you know I'm going to call him Eldris Ilmazuni now on Saturday, right?
You're always blaming me for your Agai and Aggie.
But Mark,
it's agile. It's agile, and I've asked him myself, it's agile. That's agile.
Who's going to tell Richie that it's not Dan either?
I know.
Well, you can tell him, mate.
Well, he used to do that with Paul Smith as well, didn't he? He used to say Smythe every way. Yeah, I used right. to think, I'm sure I've got it wrong.
I know, well, we've got the John and Drinan thing. It's confusing, isn't it?
That was the next one I was going to ask about.
Well, it's Drinan, but then it's also Drins, or Driz.
But more importantly, is he going or is he staying?
Okay, obviously Aaron's not had, he's not been able to hit the ground running this season. He's had injuries, he's not had a huge amount of pitch time, and his contract's up in the summer, so you know, there is interest in him from elsewhere, and he's been back in training this week, but you know, there's a lot of things that need to happen before anything happens on that. And I think if he wasn't to go anywhere, Richie would be quite happy to have him around, so that's still well up in the air, that one.
Yeah, this week the B team, if you want to call it, whatever, our squad players had a game against Brentford. We were successful with a 2-1 victory with goals from Zakabirio and Joe Piggott. Mm. Do you know whether there's any plans to actually have a proper 123s competitive season?
But it's expensive, you know. Again, all those Brentford boys are on salaries, they're on pro sort of level salaries, and they have to play matches that they're outside of a league, so they have to travel to play matches. It's expensive to run a setup like that. In an ideal world, we'd like to have one, but when we talk about sustainability and keeping the cost down, you know, I think what's working really well for us this year, and Mike Still, who probably people don't know, but he's our head of recruitment and one of our statistical analysts, he produces a report for us about the young players who are out on loan. And at this year, at any given point, we've had 6 or 7 players out on loan in and around the...
We've got some good youngsters out there.
We have, you know, lads like Zeca Birio, Charlie Pegram, Harrison Sodgy. You know, they're on loan in and around London and the South East at decent level non-league clubs. And I think we would argue that the experience they're getting going out and playing at that level, Southern League, Isthmian League, Conference South every week, is more valuable than them playing. It's useful every now and again to have a game where on the pitch where everybody walks through it for 90 minutes, but that's not the blood and thunder of playing non-league football every week, and that's useful for these boys.
I think they're looking at conference level or National League level now for Zek as well.
I was told today Zek was the best player on the pitch in that game.
Yeah,
you know, and people have been interested in Zek. And we're very pleased with him, and we're keen to tie him down on a new contract. I know people will say, well, he played in the first team 2 years ago and he hasn't done recently, but we're playing at a higher level, and I think Richie just wants Zek to be totally ready for that. So a couple of really senior non-league loans will benefit him.
I mean, I've been really impressed every time I've seen Charlie Pegram from pre-season. So even at the start of the season, there was some games in this league where I thought he was, when he came on, he changed things.
He's an absolute greyhound, didn't
he? Yeah, I thought he was brilliant. Yeah. And I'm actually surprised, actually. I thought he would have been good for the National League level, actually. Yeah. I thought he would be better than the level he's gone to. But
yeah, I think for Zek and Charlie, the next move for them both would be to go and play at a club of the level of a Dagenham or a Barnet or Bromley or someone like that.
They are training with a club as well, with Orient, aren't they, during the week, and then they're going off to play at the weekend. So it really it's a good combination.
The fact that
they're involved still with the club, and then they're off to get some really decent game time, competitive football, albeit at a lower level, for them to gain some confidence and to get used to what that involves.
Yeah, 100%.
If the new lad has come in, is there a sell-on to Fulham clause in there?
There's almost always sell-on clauses. There is in this case, and there is almost always. And that applies both to players who we may transfer out and players who we bring in. And often you're happy to do it, because if you bring somebody in for nothing, they do a good job for you and you sell them, well, if you've had to pay the club who's helped develop them to the stage where they could then do a good job for you, then I think that's fair. And it, as I say, it works both ways. We benefit from sell-on clauses most seasons, sometimes with players who haven't been with us for years. You know, the one we're looking at and have been for the last few windows is Stephen Alzati. You know, We've been very, you know, keen to see what Brighton's plans are with Stephen, because we benefit if they sell him, and he's been out on loan in Belgium and whatever. So, you know, the sell-on clauses are almost in every deal.
And Sol brings another loan player that I think we miss badly.
Yeah.
Any update on Sol?
Yeah, Sol, we've got no concerns about. We're fully expecting Sol to be with us for the rest of the season. He's expecting it too. You know, Middlesbrough are keeping a keen eye on his progress, but they've got others who they see as being above him in the pecking order at the moment, so there's no issues with Sol that we're anticipating.
The club's got Sol. I just wanted to say that.
That's what you wanted to say.
Oh dear. Apparently he's quite low down in the pecking order as far as the keepers are concerned at Middlesbrough, so we're all pretty hopeful that he will stay at least till the end of the season.
One of the things I wanted to ask Matt was, because Richie mentioned this in his excellent Outlook interview at the weekend. He mentioned his own contract because they asked him about it. What he said was, it was mentioned to me in the summer, but I've heard nothing since. I can't help but get nervous when I hear things like that, you know, because he said he's got a year and a half left.
He's just playing the game.
I think he's waiting to hear, that's all.
But look, it's easy for Richie to say that now after his five wins and a draw or whatever, isn't it? Look, we love Richie and he knows we love him. Nigel speaks to him all the time. We all speak to him all the time. He's great. He's going to be with us for hopefully a long time into the future. There's no issues with his contract at the moment.
Well, he was talking about moving his family down this way, so I think by him saying that, he's realised that he's probably having a son with regards to the contract matters.
He's a shrewd guy.
His dad and his brother are at most games, aren't they?
They're great, aren't they?
By the way, after the game on Saturday, I was chatting to Idris's father and brother after the game, and he absolutely loves Leighton Orient. He asked to come back on loan this season,
even though I'm sure
they got the Eurostar across from Paris.
They're coming over regularly as much as they can, although apparently his brother has a job
and he has
another interest, didn't he? From other clubs, I should say.
Martin Ling said that in his interview. He said we actually put in a cheeky bid for him just to see what Ipswich would do.
We tried to sign him, but we knew they'd say no. Ipswich's valuation of Idy is very high. Is very high.
So it's safe to say that come the summer, that's what we've got to wait and see. As long as a stupid offer doesn't come in, he's got to look at it.
Yeah, I think what Idy's done for us over the last season and a half has certainly caught the eye of a lot of clubs. You know, I think people can see him as a player who can certainly play at the top end of League One, if not higher. So I don't think he's someone who you could go and grab on the cheap, because his reputation's at a different level now. He's a substantial investment for us as a loan player. So,
is his contract up in the summer with Ipswich?
They have an option for another year, which I would imagine they'll take up because they'll want to protect their asset.
He really is the heartbeat of the team, isn't he? He's what makes our team tick.
Yeah, he's been almost 90 minutes of every game he's been fit for, hasn't he?
I have to say, he is, and that's not detracting in any way from his use, but some of the other players, whereas last season, I think he was...
Yeah, I think he's grown into this season more. Before Christmas, he wasn't... I didn't expect him to be as good as last season, but I think he's had to get used to League
One. What I'm saying is that the rest of the squad have grown around him.
Yeah, Jordan Brown.
The difference between Idris and the rest last season was marked, and I think now the rest of the squad are performing, that other people are stepping up to that level.
Quick change of subject, but two of the lads who sit next to me weren't aware of the ticket exchange.
Right.
Funnily enough, older boys like me, and they've come to Orient lately from Spurs, so going back to what we were talking about, and they're not turning up to every game. I question why, in a nice way. Yeah, no, they're nice guys. Mm. And they say, just family commitments. I said, well, you sell the tickets on the exchange. Oh, can we do that?
That's so interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'll take that feedback back. But one thing the club is very conscious of, and the commercial team and the ticketing team are working on at the moment, is the huge number of season ticket holders who don't turn up on a regular basis. Because our season tickets are good value, people can obviously buy one if they're only going to come to 13, 14, 15 games a year. You know, so there's either the exchange or motivating people to come more often if you can. So I know that is an active, ongoing piece of work the club's doing.
This is a suggestion. Some people probably need the money back more than others. So if we could have a more flexible approach, where if somebody wants to get, say, 80% of the ticket value back, or somebody else doesn't want to get any of it back.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it depend on what the software was capable of delivering. But certainly, I think, you know, the opportunity for people to allow someone else to come to the game in a more modern way than in the old days, where you just throw someone your season ticket book for a day, is something that all clubs are pretty much doing now. And we need to make sure that we're getting that message out there so people know that opportunity is available for them. And also then conversely, people who can't get a ticket through the normal route know how they can get a ticket. So I know the club are working hard on evaluating the data of season ticket holders who are not coming on a regular basis, and then contacting those people and finding out why it is. So that's
Matt, we've got 30 seconds to go.
Oh, sorry,
so to thank you. No, that's fine. That's why we're grateful to have you here. Thank you very much for giving up your time.
Thanks for having me.
Were you off to Reading on Saturday?
Yep, be looking forward to it.
What's the score going to be?
Lots to us. Lots more to us than tennis balls on the pitch.
Okay. Any other score predictions, guys?
2-2.
2-2? No, 2-1, Horan. We'll concede, I'm afraid. We won't get that record.
Oh, we need the record.
0-0.
I'm with you. I think we're going to nick it 1-0. I would just wish everyone a very good rest of the week, and see you with the other 2,000 O's fans at Reading on Saturday. Good night.
We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around. And you know where we can be found when Saturday comes again. We'll be trying our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're late and Orient from E10. Late and Orient from E10. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing it loud. We were formed in 1881, clans in Orient, and so begun the old story, and on it runs. We're late and Orient from E10. Whatever challenge has come our way, the Orient faithful are here to stay. We will live to fight another day. We're late and Orient from E10. Late and Orient from E10. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing it loud.
We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around. So you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we'll lay an Orient from E10. Lay an Orient from E10. Lay an Orient. Lay an Orient.
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM. News.